Whether it's her first Mother's Day or her 40th, she deserves more. Shop tons of stunning on-trend jewelry for every budget at Diamonds Direct. Diamond fashion jewelry, beautiful birthstones, everyday pearls, starting at just $200. Commemorate the real loves of her life with a gorgeous pendant featuring the birthstone of the one who made her mom. This Mother's Day, Diamonds Direct has everything you need to say thank you. Diamonds Direct, your love, our passion. Online at DiamondsDirect.com.
With everything you have on your plate, earning your degree online seems impossible. But at Grand Canyon University, we specialize in helping you fit a master's degree in business into your busy day. Your graduation team, led by your own GCU counselor, provides you with the personal support you need to succeed. Achieve your goals with a plan and team behind you. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Visit gcu.edu.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in LA, and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's 11:28 p.m. at the Opera Populaire, and you're listening to Night Call.
Night Call.
Welcome to Night Call, a podcast for your strange days and lonely nights. My name is Emily Yoshida. I'm in New York. On the other end of the line, in Los Angeles, we have
Molly Lambert, and with me is
Tess Lynch. And again, over in New York, we have
Leslie Moon.
A special guest, Leslie Moon.
Hooray!
Hooray! Leslie is a real person, even though it sounds like she's a Frasier fanfiction character we invented.
Oh my god, Daphne's like sister Daphne. from Manchester, who's like maybe a real minx. Leslie is a real person. She is my good friend from Los Angeles. We've known each other since our Big Chill days.
For sure.
And Leslie now lives in Berlin, and she's visiting New York this week. And she is a trainer and also just in general like a writer and thinker about fitness. Fitness is like maybe like a bad word, but like just about like physical activity and one's practice. So I thought that would be kind of fun to talk about because I think we tend to be really big advocates of like brain in a jarism.
Are you advocates for it, or are you just
we all fall on different lines of it. Tess says that she's 100% brain in a jar, but I would argue otherwise.
Tess is like a big digger of holes, I hear.
I do.
Literal holes?
She loves to dig a hole.
I have a backyard, and like occasionally when I feel existential dread or just frustration with something, there's like a tree adoption event every so often in my neighborhood, and I have all these trees in pots. You know, I have them waiting for those times, and then I'll go out in the yard and dig a gigantic hole.
And it's satisfying, right?
It's very satisfying. I have like the world's worst shovel, so I really have to work at it, and that's how I get it out. But I don't consider it exercise, even though it hurts.
It's not that it's exercise, it's that it's using your body to do something that's satisfying, which is, I feel like, what I like about Leslie's exercise practice, whatever Leslie would like to call it. What do you think of it? It's like an art practice that involves exercise, but it's about like practical things like you
getting
did one
up.
When, You did one that was about like lifting things in the way that is like the best,
the most efficient way to get up from the floor with something overhead.
And like the way to do it properly so you don't like fuck up your back and shoulders, which is
Yeah, for sure. I mean, my relationship to exercise and movement is like for sure evolved over the last, long time, because I grew up in LA in the middle of like fitness culture, which I totally resented. And think I lived a very brain in the jar kind of existence, except for like doing classes with Emily. Yeah, I was a swimmer. I did do some sports. I did actually many sports, but not very many compared to like my super athlete friends. One of my best friends when I was a little kid became a professional football player. And but I did gymnastics until I got too tall for that. And then once I was in high school and started to dabble in photography, I think that the darkroom kind of swallowed me up. And I didn't fully come out of that until I got a trainer for a bit in LA through a job that I had. And this trainer worked with me like 3 times a week. And it was oddly something that my work was paying for. So I just took full advantage of that because they weren't paying me very well.
Do you think that they were paying you for like superficial reasons? Like they wanted to make sure that all of their people on the
I think it was just like something that they weren't fully aware of. It was just like a weird insurance loophole.
It was a glitch in the matrix.
There was a glitch that I found in the matrix, and I really, really liked it, actually.
Well, it
once
was
I
so
got into
funny
it.
Because we were like so poor at that time, but it was like you were going to this really fancy gym. And I still remember where it was because it was so unusual to be in a place like that,
a penthouse gym
that
overlooked Wilshire Boulevard.
We were like out on the patio like swinging kettlebells. That was like the first time I ever did that, and I was so sore.
Night Call is brought to you by Robinhood. Robinhood is an investing app that lets you buy and sell stocks, ETFs, options, and cryptos, all commission-free. They strive to make financial services work for everyone, not just the wealthy. It's a non-intimidating way for stock market newcomers to invest for the first time with true confidence. Robinhood is simple and intuitive, with clear design and data presented in an easy-to-digest way. While other brokerages charge up to $10 for every trade, Robinhood doesn't charge any commission fees, which means you can trade stocks and keep all of your profits. Plus, if you're already interested in investing, Robinhood helps you learn how to invest by offering stock collections, so you can browse curated categories like female CEOs as you build your portfolio. And the app makes it easy to understand trading with charts and market data, so you can place a trade in just 4 taps. Robinhood is giving listeners a free stock like Apple, Ford, or Sprint to help build your portfolio. Sign up at nightcall.robinhood.com. That's nightcall.robinhood.com. I went into an Equinox with somebody and I was like, oh, you could just live here. How do they stop people from just living here?
I have this thing I wrote, like, because I was an Equinox member when I was at The Verge, and I had to quit when I could no longer afford to be an Equinox member. But I like wrote a thing that I never published anywhere that was like my goodbye to all that, but about Equinox.
Oh, can I publish that?
Yeah, maybe. Actually, it might have been lost in my computer when I mean, what that made me think of though is like how I think there's like impediments to people getting into adopting that into their lifestyle, because like one, they like feel like they could never identify as somebody who like goes to a gym or something.
Yeah,
like
I think
that.
That's what we're talking about. It's like as like a nerd girl. You have to be like, well, I'm not a jock.
Yeah. And I hate my body, and I will never acknowledge that it's there, and I will do everything in my power to deny it.
I didn't hate my body, but I saw it as, like, functional. I was like, my body is for, like, getting me from one place to another, but not that, it, like, I don't want, it doesn't have to be ornamental. It can just be, the truck that, like, drives me around with my body.
I'm very respectful of other people's exercise routines. I find it very, I've done it before, and I did Power of 10, I think it was called, for a while, where it's like just lifting as much as you can lift.
And Tess can really lift some stuff because she has kids. So
Tess, I don't think your brain in a jar at all.
No, she's not. But I respect that you're conviction that you are.
I think it's more that I went through periods where I would like really just spend a lot of time. Like in college, I spent a lot of time in the gym because it was free at mm-hmm. school.
Oh, yeah.
And I think I was really interested in becoming like super, super strong. But mm-hmm. then eventually it just made me like just crazy hungry all the time. So much hungrier than a real person should be. Because I was expending so many calories.
Yeah.
And then I was starving. It's like I was preparing for someone to like want to fight or something. I try to be active, like if it's easier, you know, if I can walk someplace, I will. I'm lifting kids and bags and I like to like carry stuff for people if the opportunity arises. I'm a workhorse. Maybe in LA, I'm very like aware of the kind of like the vanity of feeling as though it's not like a spiritual or like you're in tune with your body thing, but it's more of a, you know, superficial thing. I just reject it and it makes me like I'm very ornery about it. Yeah, it's a different, it's like a totally different approach.
I think, I always resented the like kind of fitness practices that were dominant in Los Angeles, and really like it took me until moving to Berlin to like, to get so down with. And even then, like, I was going for strength and not for some kind of an aesthetic goal.
Right. But it's not like, you know, toning your calves or whatever. People like these really micro obsession things about certain parts of your body.
Or
and
like,
you like punish.
Trendy, like, you know, fitness trends that come and go. Or
well, we've
it's like, you know, everyone.
We
talked about SoulCycle.
I have strong opinions.
But there's all
kind
of stuff like that. My friends went to a CrossFit. I'm like, I remember just CrossFit just being like, nah, like, that's not for me.
Well, because of Rhabdo. Is it called Rhabdo?
There was one called Sweat Garage where it's like they put you in a garage and they close the garage door and they're like, now you're in the sweat garage. And I was like, no.
Now you're trapped.
God. Wait, what?
That sounds awful.
Isn't there a thing with CrossFit where like, and this relates to like lifting things the correct way, where there's a danger?
Yes.
And I think we've talked about this on the podcast.
That's why CrossFit's
maybe before.
Bad. It's like you're not supposed to push yourself to the limit all the time. And that's what's good. Back to Leslie about Leslie's breakfast studio is a lot of it is about sort of functional things and
I mean, I think that what I'm on a path towards and what I'm trying to help facilitate other people to do is to just be able to do something that prompts a positive adaptation in their bodies. So like doing stuff that feels good, that makes them stronger, that makes them more mobile, but is also just something that like becomes a really practical and sustainable part of their lives. So that's also really individual. Like people live very differently. And for some folks, like CrossFit will be great actually because they're really tuned to it. It's something that'll serve them. They have more energy or whatever. They're more fit for like Olympic weightlifting and gymnastics and all that kind of stuff that's in that package. But for other people, like CrossFit would just be like system overload, total shutdown. Like they're even more alienated from fitness than they were when they started trying CrossFit or whatever.
Or they hurt themselves or something and then you really like give up for a long time.
Yeah. And I think it's like, it's just really important to create a space where people aren't scared of trying to get stronger. There's like, there's a way for anybody if they're like reached properly to get stronger. It's just different for everyone.
I wanted to talk about our experience on election night. Also, hi everybody, we're on the other side of the election. But that night, I was just trying to figure out what to do. Like I had a screening that I maybe could go to, or, you know, I was just trying to figure out what to do with myself that evening to not just go crazy. And Leslie and I ended up going to a martial arts class that, like, I did not realize was going to be 2.5 hours long. It was like a class, and then there was just kind of a practice session in the middle of it, too.
There's a lot of teaching.
There's a lot, yeah. It wasn't like constantly doing stuff, but it was still like by the end of it, I was like shaking.
Were you good at martial arts by the end?
I mean, we learned
how to.
I felt
good at martial arts by the end. I'm just kidding. No, I got Indian burns, really bad.
Yeah,
one.
But it was like, it was really, really great, and it was so different from. I've even been doing boxing lately, but it was even different from that. But it was like, it's like the opposite of brain of the jar, because like if you're brain of the jar during a stressful time, like, I don't know, say any given point of the last several years.
Right. And that's what we all like about physical activity is it like taking you yourself out of the brain in a jar. And that's why it's fun to like dig the hole, is because you're like, I just got to dig the hole. And like, it's fun to
it's
dig
mindful.
The hole. It's mindful.
Mm-hmm. But the thing that's also crazy, and I was talking about this when we were talking about group fitness like a few weeks ago, was that I started going back to the Physique 57 and like the pop physiques of the world and stuff. And I hadn't gone for years and years to that. And mm-hmm. I went back and it was such a culture shock. Like, especially because I think like I had been taking so many of my cues from you, Leslie, and mm-hmm. or like trying to rethink about how, like how I approach doing any kind
in
of
these classes.
Well, no, like in the classes, it's just like so the opposite of everything. Like it's just like these models and stuff, and
all
like
sadistic.
Just being
it depends
yelled
what
at.
You want. Yeah. It depends what you want. It's like they're all styles, and like I also just like as a people watcher enjoy all the styles. Like I also enjoy going to Runyon Canyon and seeing people that are like super dressed up to work out. You know,
I love
but
that.
I personally,
I love that you talk about the power of observation in terms of like exercise. But, like if you put yourself within these things, like they're really different experientially.
Yeah, for sure. I go to the YMCA. Which my friend Sarah got me into in part because it's like the most unintimidating gym environment.
I love the YMCA.
Yeah, like the YMCA is all, it's a lot of old people.
Well, we go to
which
different
one?
Ys. We go to different Ys, but mine is also mostly people over 60 and people
and
under
just,
12.
Like, naked and body confident, which is my fave.
I
also,
just
there's
love
a really
that.
Good sense of community at the Y. Like, you get to know the people, your time frame tends to line up. So eventually you have like pretty deep discussions with your 89-year-old
I've
friend.
Also heard some really, like, I eavesdrop, you know, obviously in like the locker room, and I heard a really interesting, like, Prop 10 conversation right before the vote.
Oh, man.
It was a couple of people talking about how they were voting yes. RIP Prop 10. We're still going to figure out rent control in Los Angeles. But one of the reasons that we were talking about fitness so much is because we have to get swole for the apocalypse, right?
Oh, yeah.
I'm not getting swole, you guys, but I'm supporting you getting
you're
swole.
You know, I don't know. I think when, in terms of this whole sentiment of like getting swole for the apocalypse, that to me as a professional, like it totally shuts me down. I'm just like, nope. Like my role as a like fitness mentor is sort of to help to get people to do training just out of like a sense of curiosity and not for any specific purpose, even though it could be functional. Yeah. Like I think that it's more about like what will happen if we try to do this, like in a safe, obviously in like a safe and prepared environment,
or like expand your notion of what your body can do or something, because there's like some inherent use to that even if you're not good at whatever you're doing.
Which is kind of like this like notion of self-imposed enrichment that I'm like a big believer in, and kind of doing things for no reason. Like last year I just started climbing up these mountains because I realized that like I was like, if I don't start summiting mountains, I'm never gonna be a summiter, so I've got to get going.
It's
and
true.
I'm like not a mountaineer. I'm not even a hiker at all. I was raised like in the concrete jungle of LA. And
but I mean, we used to go on hikes, and you like I remember.
I would die. I would die on hikes with Emily.
I got so gung ho into hiking, like it became a real.
And you loved
obsession.
Beating me.
Oh my god, I loved it so much.
Wait, yeah, Leslie, true. Did you get strong to become stronger than Emily?
Yes, it all comes down to that.
Oh, this is totally. Where we're talking about this. This is going to culminate in an arm wrestling championship.
Yeah, it will.
A night call arm wrestling.
I'm already putting money
tournament.
On Emily. I'm sorry, Molly.
I feel like you've got secret strength you don't even know about.
You're probably
you've got that
better.
Mom strength.
Yeah, you're probably
mom
better.
Mom strength
arm
is
wrestling.
Like, you know, they always talk about like moms can like lift a car if they see like a car
it's
coming
the
towards their kid.
The mom adrenaline.
If you could summon that adrenaline.
No, moms can lift a lot. Like I sometimes cue moms when we're like doing a deadlift. I'll tell them that like their kid is trapped under a car, and then like all
idea.
Of a sudden they can lift like 20 kilos more. Or that's like 44 pounds more.
Oh my god.
Your brain switched to kilos, Leslie. How long does that take before
I'm
you go?
I'm fully European, guys. I'm just like I'm in my American suit.
You're like toning down your LA voice right now though, I feel
I know.
Like.
I've been trying real hard to have a New York voice.
A New York voice?
Yeah. Well, I'm trying to have it right now. You guys can't tell.
Oh, my God. You're not loud enough. You have to, like, yell your opinion. Like, everybody yelling at the same time would be
guys,
a New York podcast.
Is that New York voice?
Look, as a Los Angeles person who likes to yell my opinion at people, let's not make these generalizations about where the loud people who yell come from.
It's true.
We're all over.
Today's episode of Night Call is brought to you by Lola, a modern approach to feminine care. Lola is a female-founded company offering a line of organic cotton tampons, pads, and liners. They now offer sex products, too. Unlike other major brands, Lola products are 100% natural. No BS, no mystery fibers, no doubts about what you're putting in your body. Another great thing about Lola is they come in simple, customizable subscription, so you get exactly what you need when you need it. We all had the chance to try Lola's period products, and besides knowing that they're all natural, they're also beautifully designed and packaged. We're also fans of being able to choose the right mix of products, absorbency, number of boxes, and frequency, which makes things so much easier and better than buying a bunch of boxes at the drugstore. And their cleansing wipes are the first to be all natural and biodegradable, plus they're gynecologist approved and hypoallergenic. It's also great to see a sex line designed by women with women in mind, so there are no unnecessary irritating additives in their condoms and lubricant. And one of the things we most love about Lola is that for every purchase, the company donates feminine care products to homeless shelters across the U.S. For 40% off all subscriptions, visit mylola.com and enter CALL when you subscribe. That's mylola.com, enter C-A-L-L for 40% off your subscription.
Cool. Tess, what is that? Is it a monster?
It's a little fidgety guy.
Tess has a finger monster.
I have a fidgety guy.
Oh, is it
guy.
One of those like little gummy ones?
Roy's yeah. looking. Yeah. Show Roy.
Oh my gosh. I love those so much.
Me too.
I realized I've started biting my nails again. Are you guys into fidgeting? Because I had a fidget cube and I couldn't figure. I was like, none of these buttons push. It's like it's supposed to frustrate you or something. So I was like, I need to just get like a fidget thing that's not going to make me
Fidget's
mad.
Fidget's a fidget square.
It's like it's a fidget cube, and it's like a little plastic cube, and it has like little kind of button protuberances on it and like little switches. It's you're just both basically supposed to like play with it. It's like a fidget spinner, but a cube.
Yeah, yeah.
If you have like if you bite your nails or if you like pick your cuticles, you just kind of it's something to do with your hands. Like I took up knitting to also try and stop doing that, but I couldn't end. Like my things, I just have like really long.
I've been compulsively
scarves.
Baking, which is maybe the opposite of doing martial arts and boxing.
It's
the,
but you can't but bake when you're in a booth.
Not actually, because
it's not.
Like,
you're right. It's all.
I'm a
it's
baker.
All using your thing.
And it's just like, Leslie bakes pies.
You punch that bread also, and you need it sometimes. We should take a night email, perhaps.
Let's do it. So we're going to take a night email, and as always, if you want to send us an email, you can at nightcallpodcast@gmail.com. You can also give us a call at 1-240-46-NIGHT. This email comes to us from Daniel, and Daniel says, "Dear Night Operators, I just finished watching Titanic for the first time. I'm 34 and have obstinately, even proudly, refused to watch it until now because I thought I was too cool. I was wrong. I'm a little drunk. I watched it alone, so maybe I missed something. But what the fuck? The ending. The last scene, where in all one weird dissolve, we go from underwater and all the people that died are still on the Titanic. So Rose dies and Jack is waiting for her with all the ghosts? Titanic limbo? What is the moral? No one ever escapes the Titanic? It's The Shining underwater? Another frozen Jack trapped forever in some Gilded Age parallel universe? So intensely dark. Why did no one tell me about this? I've been planning a night call since I listened to the Annihilation episode because it got me thinking about cosmic horror. Like, what is the definition? I wanted to ask, what are some of your favorite cosmic horror movies? But now I have to ask, is Titanic a cosmic horror movie? I know there are no aliens or no body horror, but there is the crushing indifference of the North Atlantic and the tentacle ropes whipping around and the sheer scale of the disaster driving sailors to suicide. The ship is an elder god returning to the deep to become a tiny hell for all the souls it swallowed. So yeah, other than the Titanic, what are your favorite cosmic horror movies? Thanks, Dan."
Wow, what a great night email.
Excellent night. It hit all the points.
Yeah.
It's good. It's real good. I really like the read of Titanic as a cosmic horror movie. I don't think it's wrong, if only because, what was I thinking about recently, where when I saw it when I was in seventh grade, I was sort of surprised that I didn't cry at the end when everybody else said that they cried, but I cried at the beginning because I knew it was going to happen. Like, I cried when they were leaving the port. There's something else like that recently that I watched that I felt like was the same. Oh, yeah, like A Star Is Born. Like, I cry when she goes on stage because it's, like, the best that it's going to be, you know? And it's all downhill from there.
That happens
you're
to
like,
me.
They don't even
that.
Know.
Yeah.
They have no idea. I did not like Titanic at all.
You've never liked
you
Titanic?
You didn't like Titanic?
No.
When you were a child?
Yeah.
Why not?
Because I thought, this is so mean. I was like, Leonardo DiCaprio had like already peaked by that point.
What?
Peaked in Romeo and Juliet.
He did. It's
he
actually did.
He
true.
Was peaked already a squarehead by Titanic.
You're like saying what I've thought ever since I was like, you know, since Titanic came out. Like, I felt the exact same way, but I think I've always been afraid to admit that to myself.
Well, he's a very damp boy also.
he's a damp boy. They tried to like...
Like Timothée Chalamet, they're making into a damp boy now. But Leo was like the original damp boy.
Oh, that kind of damp boy. I don't get Timothée Chalamet
no.
at all.
He's a, it's the exact same appeal as
get it.
As
no,
Leo.
No, no, I'd
disagree.
Argue no.
No way.
I find no appeal in Timothée, honestly.
Well, it's because you're not 13.
Leo at least had like a tinge of like threateningness to him. Like Timothée Chalamet is so unthreatening. It's like for people that don't actually want to kiss boys yet. They're like, ooh, the unscariest boy in the world.
Right.
But he's a little more interesting than Justin Bieber, which was the same thing.
No, Justin Bieber's got edge.
No, but original recipe Justin Bieber was like the most...
Even then, you could sense the darkness.
You think?
In Baby? Baby, Baby?
Baby,
yeah, there's a lot of darkness in Baby, though.
I like the idea of the iceberg making it a cosmic horror movie because obviously there's a lot of icebergs in like H.P. Lovecraft. That's yeah. where the ancient aliens live in a couple of them.
Well, all North Pole things are existential. I mean, anything having to do like Frankenstein is, like feels like cosmic horror just because it starts with like this wreck in the Arctic. Like that's terrifying to me.
Is 2001 cosmic horror?
Well, of
it
course.
It is, right?
That's
like
the
cosmic
that would, I was going to say
number
that
one.
Mine too.
That's the best.
I mean, initially I was going with Alien, but I think 2001 is, you can't really
As we've talked, Alien is a hybrid cosmic horror slasher.
It's true.
Right.
With a little bit of body horror, pregnancy horror.
Yeah, pregnancy horror.
Sprinkled in.
In revisiting Titanic, it is a very dated movie, I think. But I definitely cried in
you
the
did?
Theater. Well, yeah, like I saw it in the theater as a child. And the idea, I think mostly like the parts that made me cry were like the band played on aspect. It's really sad to see musicians playing on a sinking ship. I felt like it was a good allegory for my sixth grade or whatever, seventh grade year. It was deeply depressing. The story of Titanic is just super sad on its nose, clearly, and you don't really need a love story to make it depressing. So I feel like I was crying more at the broad strokes of the ship.
Right, it was such a broad movie. That's
well,
why
it's like the
it
movie.
Tried to be specific.
Yeah, he's poor and she's rich.
And
it's
they,
true.
There's love and longing, and they don't get
I
to
remember
be together.
Enjoying
like, the greatest like, story ever told.
Yeah.
You know what's a very sad image, and you can put it in any movie, and I'd probably cry. It's just someone being freezing cold in water.
No, yeah. I remember being.
Oh,
a little
I can't
bit, like,
watch that without being thought, like, "Oh, it's so awful to be freezing cold in water and just die that way."
I thought the
All
special effects
like that.
Were a little like.
Well, because it was
oh
from
my
a million years
God,
ago.
Molly, you are such a. In 1997, you thought that the special effects in Titanic were whatever.
I mean,
are you
especially
kidding me
when
right
he
now?
Was. Especially when he was freezing to death, I thought the makeup was a little bit like
really
like oh he's
the
blue
makeup
and
was
he's like
over the top.
But yeah. It's like I mean, but you understand that it's like in conversation with like A Night to Remember and all these old
well,
like 3-hour
yes,
Hollywood
of course,
epics
and
shit.
I don't
like,
think it's as it's not as good as those movies.
It's better than A Night to Remember. It's like,
I also like how this turned into a James Cameron podcast accidentally, because they can, I was
all,
gonna,
we're all bring always up, teetering on the edge of, no, becoming a James Cameron podcast.
Because that's like all I was gonna bring up was Terminator 2 is my only reason for being like, that's why we have to get swole for the apocalypse is Terminator 2.
Well,
it doesn't help to be swole anymore, Molly. That's the sad truth of it, I think.
You just need to learn how to throw a punch.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
The other, I'm trying to think of, like, cosmic horror movies. And it's not a cosmic horror movie, but it's, like, a cosmic, like cosmic wonder movie, which I think can sometimes do a lot of the same things, which is Arrival, which is probably my, like, most recent favorite movie. Certainly my favorite movie of 2016.
It's like an upbeat cosmic horror movie.
Well, it's not even upbeat, because it's actually like there's like a very dark premise at the end of it. But the kind of the scale, I think, is the big thing. Like what he's talking about with the ship and Titanic. Like, I think that thing of like the just wildness, like that happens to your brain when you see a gigantic ship like sticking,
sure,
up out of the water.
That was my favorite part, was the end when it sank. Sorry.
That's, I mean, we all were, that's what we're there for.
That's the money shot, right?
Right.
Like, you're the whole,
when it breaks.
It's like A Star Is Born. You're like, but again, the money shot of A Star Is Born that I'm still mad isn't in the new A Star Is Born is that in all the other versions, he walks into the ocean to die. And all I wanted was to see Bradley Cooper walk into the ocean to die.
Wow.
Never get to see it.
They're far from the shallows now. You just wanted that literal.
They just like hit an iceberg
thing
at the end.
Like, he just runs. He walks into the ocean and hits an iceberg. We also had another bit of feedback via our Facebook group, which you can find on Facebook.com if you're still a member of Facebook.com. A member? Is that what you would call it? No, a user. I had said that Missouri was a southern state last week, and this is apparently controversial. And maybe this is not right, but it's what I feel in my heart. My general rule of thumb is if it has Waffle House, it's southern, and Missouri has Waffle House. And Iowa, which borders it to the north where I live, does not. Kansas, which borders it to the west, does not. Illinois, there might be a couple of Waffle Houses, southern Illinois, like Champaign-Urbana, maybe. But I don't think so. I don't know that.
What's the Midwestern version of Waffle House? What do you have instead?
Potato House.
Corn House. Cheese House. Yeah, just any place where they serve cheese curds.
I would go to Cheese House. Yeah, I don't even like cheese, and I'd go to Cheese House just to see.
Wait, I want to know. I love regional diners.
Yeah, I mean, the charm of Waffle House is it's so bare bones. Like, it's such a clean
Waffle
space.
House fucking rules.
Yeah.
I had never been there, and I went to Florida, and the first time I went to Florida, I didn't go. And then I was like, how did I not go? It's the only thing I wanted to do. I went back and went, and it lived up to the legend.
What did you get?
Just like the regular stuff. Like, I was just like, it's so cool that it's open 24 hours.
Yeah,
like, I wish we had that here.
It's like amazing. A place for
they
teenagers.
They have grits.
I mean, I've had grits at Waffle House, but they have the same menu everywhere.
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I just want to say that we have to concede, though, because the person who posted in the Night Callers group has lived in St. Louis for nearly 30 years. And
no,
if they claim it's Midwestern, I'm going to say it's Midwestern.
I said I know, I feel like people from Missouri think of it as Midwestern, but I agree that it is like a gateway to the South, perhaps.
Let's say it's 95% Midwestern,
but
5%
I'm also, like,
Southern.
I'm going to pitch something else to you guys, okay? And
yes.
Again, not having lived in Missouri, but having lived north of Missouri and having also had family in Kansas, in eastern Kansas. So we would be in Missouri all the time because like most of Kansas City is in Missouri. And that's where the Waffle House is, because I went to go see Weezer once in Kansas City and we had to like go over to the Missouri side to go to Waffle House afterwards.
You're going to say Kansas City is technically the South and the rest of Missouri is
No, because Kansas is a free state. So no, Kansas is not a southern state.
Is that the divider?
That's the real divider. That's the real divider.
It's fucked up and makes sense.
Yeah. But the other thing about Missouri that I just feel like a Midwestern state would not have Branson in it. A Southern state would have Branson.
I feel like Branson is so Midwestern.
No.
No.
Have you been
it's
to Branson?
So Southern. Oh, my God.
25, 23, 25, 1, 8:15:5.
The holidays are just around the corner. How's your holiday shopping going? I know it's hard to find a perfect gift for everyone in your life. I often struggle to find gifts for my podcast mates, but luckily, we've all discovered Canvas People. For a really special gift for the special people in your life, you've got to check out Canvas People. Canvas People prints your favorite memories on canvas and turns them into unique works of art that add a beautiful touch to your home. I was just thinking about holiday gifts I could order for Tess and Emily, and I was thinking maybe like a lovely photo of all three of us together printed on a canvas from Canvas People. Canvas People is great for decor. The prints are like pieces of art. With Canvas People, you get your favorite memories printed to cherish and beautiful prints that look great on any wall. Now, as a special, very limited holiday offer, CanvasPeople.com is offering their popular 11x14 photo canvases for free. That's right, free. These normally sell for $69.99, but for this week only, you'll pay nothing. Just cover shipping and handling. To get your free canvas, text CALL to 484848. Just pay shipping and handling. This offer won't last. Text CALL to 484848. That's CALL to 484848. Message and data rates may apply.
12, 5, 15, 8, 1, 25, 8, 23, 8.
As an addendum to our previous conversation before we transition into the non-corporeal realm, like there was definitely a year where I decided to like acknowledge the fact that I had a body, and it was when I was in college. I was at Loyola Marymount. Both of our, like,
I'm so impressed.
Half alma maters. Leslie and I both went to
the darkest secret.
It's like the most horrible place in the world.
I just went there for the first time to do a KXLU show.
KXLU rules.
The campus is hell. The campus is hell.
It's so gothic.
The old buildings, the original buildings there are really nice. But I don't know.
Like out in the spooky middle of nowhere.
It's really weird.
The west side.
But they had a big gym there, and I took my first ever yoga class there. I remember it so vividly because I'd never done any kind of working out or gone to a gym or anything like that before. And I was like, I'm going to go to a yoga class.
Is that we all did a lot of free fitness and probably got some free healthcare in college.
Oh, yeah.
It was free.
Yeah.
Actually, that is super important to me, though, is this like accessibility issue. Because that's, I think, one of the things that like people just don't go because it's so bloody expensive. Like, it just is crazy. And then in the end, really, like, it's hard. Exercise is hard and it's uncomfortable. And if it's also expensive, like, only some crazy freaks are going to go for it. And we've already got those people, but I'm trying to, like, bring it to the masses and just make also it something that, like, everybody feels comfortable
and it's
doing.
Out of reach.
Yeah.
You don't want it to be an art form that's out of reach to the common people, such as opera.
This is also incorrect, okay? Because we're going to talk about Phantom of the Opera in a second here. Leslie surprised me with tickets to Phantom. It's one of the best things that's ever happened to me in my life, that somebody like surprised me with Broadway tickets. But I have to say, on the economic and accessibility side of it, it's so much more expensive to see Phantom, like the most performed show, than to go to the actual opera.
Really?
Yeah, I go to the Met I go like a couple times a year, and you can get a seat there for like $30. Like,
really?
I had no idea. I was very Lucille Bluth about how much it would cost to go to the opera.
You know, me
like
too.
It's $6,000.
You know what? But totally reasonable.
How much could it cost? $2,000.
Yeah. It is somewhat expensive. It's expensive in Los Angeles, according to Paul.
Because I think it's better. I think it's better in Los Angeles.
Opera is better in Los Angeles?
Less of it, maybe. Also,
but it's supposed to be a more thriving scene in LA.
The opera scene is than in New York.
Yeah. I think that the general consensus, and I'm an idiot, so I can't tell the difference. But from what I hear, it's in hard times right now.
This is fully a Frasier podcast.
Anyway,
now.
I'm wearing a turtleneck and talking about the opera.
Oh my gosh! You went to see a show on Broadway.
On Broadway.
That was my first Broadway show, also.
Yeah.
So was it like Times Square?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was it magic?
It was at the Majestic. So it was Majestic.
It was Majestic. Was it a matinee or a night show?
It was a night show.
It was a night show.
We went to it was a night show.
We went to Sardi's
first.
For
which I guess my friend Max's dad used to hang out at in the 60s, and it was full of cool people.
But Emily took me on a magical Times Square adventure.
Molly loves Times Square too. So.
I do. Anyway,
we didn't go to Sardi's though. Somebody puked in the Sardi's bathroom. It was lit.
We went to a boxing bar.
We went to is it Frank's? I think it's called.
We went to a dive bar, and I was like, "Ooh, we walked into like 1950s New York. This is the best.
It's
like,
great.
Let's stay here."
Oh, I want to go to Frank's.
Oh, we should
go.
Wait,
so you saw? So you stepped into the 80s. With Andrew Lloyd Webber.
Yeah. So Leslie, you should give your background. Why this outing? Oh. Why then?
Well, I grew up in LA, but I was raised in a very conservative evangelical Christian family. And so it was a bit of a bubble, to say the least. And we just had like Christian music CDs available. Besides that, it was this Billy Joel double CD, Whitney Houston, Whitney, Pointer Sisters, and the Phantom of the Opera soundtrack. And so I listened to the Phantom of the Opera before I even like saw it or knew the story or anything. And I was fully like recreating it for my parents, like as like a childhood, like after dinner show with my cat and my brother and like my next door neighbor who was five. And we'd like do these like long, whatever, performances of it. And
just, like pop up behind the couch.
Yeah.
Or like
my brother like, would be the phantom.
Oh, God.
With the cape. It was the cutest. Anyway, then we did actually go see Phantom of the Opera because I loved it so much. I think I saw it twice. And it made an impression on me, a really big impression. And I was aware of that. I loved all the music forever and ever. But until Emily and I went back. Oh, no. Actually, I should back up a little bit. Like 2 years ago, I was thinking about that song, The Music of the Night, because mm-hmm. I was like doing some writing, and I was thinking about the lyrics of the song, and like how it's about like surrendering yourself to the night, and how much I think that it sort of like set the stage for all my wildness, like and sort of inner allegiances, even to the present day, to the night and nighttime activities, and it's very like.
It's sensual and erotic. Is that what you're going to say? Okay, so I saw The Phantom of the Opera as a child also, like Leslie, because my mom's friend Marge invited her to see it at the Pantages, and my mom was like, nah, like, I'm not interested, but like, why don't you take Molly?
Right.
You know?
Oh, my goodness.
No. Too lowbrow for me. Take my daughter. And that was like, for sure, like, one of my first experiences with like super lowbrow, like, just kitsch. And I was like, I love it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, stuff that my cool parents are like, this is a little too like stupid and
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. A little basic for them.
It is a spectacle.
It is such a spectacle.
It is a gothic romance, and I got obsessed with it. And I had like the coffee
did you read
table
the book?
Book?
You had the book.
I had,
oh
yeah,
my goodness.
I read the original book, and then I had like a coffee table book that had like the lyrics in it. And I also tried to stage like a youth production of Phantom of the Opera at my elementary school.
How'd that go?
I cast my friends. I was the director and also cast myself in the crucial but small role of Meg.
Yeah, nice.
I love that you made yourself in Meg.
I was like, that's a role I can play while still maintaining command of this production.
The most useless character in Broadway history.
We like got to a point where we had someone's dad record a VHS of us like performing something from it. My friend Jesse was the phantom. It was an all-female production.
Love it.
Oh, that's great.
It's like a Takarazuka review of Phantom of the Opera.
I feel like I learned about Broadway songs because there was no internet from the airplane radio station. Mm-hmm. There was like an airplane radio station that was like hits of Broadway.
When you're on an airplane and you could choose like eight different channels.
Yeah, there's one that's like songs, current Broadway hits of the 1980s when I would have been on this plane.
Well, I knew all the songs and I had seen it. I went to go see it because there was a touring company that came to Des Moines when I was in high school, and we went with the drama club to go see Phantom, like a matinee show of Phantom.
Oh, it's so cute.
And I fell asleep during it. I thought it was so boring. But I knew all the songs because, I don't know, just like I knew.
Maybe you didn't really fall asleep. You were just taken to like an underground lair on a boat.
I remember our seats were really like far to the right. So I never got the full effect of the boat ride, which is like so incredible. The sequence. Okay, so like the sequence of them going down when they do the Phantom of the Opera song. And then the boat ride, and then when he sings Music of the Night.
It's so dazzling.
It's so insane.
There was an 80s boom. I feel like it was like at the same time probably as some Vegas-y stuff. It was like a boom in practical effects in big musicals.
Right, so like Miss Saigon.
Right, the helicopter in Miss Saigon, like Les Mis and Phantom to me are like the big ones where it was like the reason you would go, because like who wants to see a musical? You're going because it's like a crazy like stage experience, and then
it gets also... it's something for the husbands to be like, wow, I can't believe they pulled that off.
I remember my dad telling me like about the chandelier. He was like, they dropped the chandelier in the audience.
That's literally all that like a father would care, like.
Well, it's so like Grand Guignol too, to be like, oh, like, you know, some violent crazy opera. Like, I like all that stuff. I like that genre. I like gothic romance
he
in general.
He shoots fireballs at them.
That makes no sense. That's his, like, special power is, like, these, like fireworks.
But they're silent, so it's, like, really kind of under... Like, they're really bright. They're, like, flares that shoot across, but there's no sound.
I don't know if I remember
this. It's just, like, pew!
And then it's, like, what did they actually do, though? Like, they don't...
This is, like, the scene when she's at her father's grave where they're really nailing home the daddy issues of the entire show, and then he's like talking to her about like, don't you miss my fathering gaze, and it's like a deeply psychosexual show. And
I mean to be fair, I haven't seen it since I was like 7.
Has
anyone seen the movie?
Mm-mm. No, I'm curious
about it.
Isn't
though.
It like Gerard Butler?
Yeah, it's Gerard Butler.
Mini Driver in
Emmy
it,
or? Rossum is or Emmy Rossum. So I did a lot of like poking around afterwards, because I, even though I think that the show is pretty non-functional, as I think a few Andrew Lloyd Webber shows are, like there was something still so captivating about
That's
all
the
of
thing,
those
is
big
it's like
sets.
It's bad, but it doesn't matter because it's entertaining, which to me is like that makes it good,
well,
I guess.
But there are elements that I think are actually genuinely good about it. It's just that there's so much stuff that is like yada yada ish.
Yeah, and the songs are whatever, and
kind
like some of the
incoherent.
I think the good ones.
But
Cats, you have to all see Cats.
Cats really makes no sense.
Yeah, well, Cats
I'm
is just like a
to
tone
revisit
poem.
Cats.
Yeah, you just have to imagine somebody making some of these musicals and then getting to Cats. And like, now we're doing this musical. Everyone's a cat. Because Starlight Express is like everyone's on roller skates and their trains.
Right.
You know?
Rachel is dying right now. I think we're like bringing up a lot for Rachel.
And I was in Jesus Christ Superstar. Tess informed
me
that
jealous.
She was not, in fact, in Jesus Christ Superstar.
Not for lack of trying. Didn't make the cut.
But that's probably the best Andrew Lloyd Webber musical.
That's a great one.
Jesus Christ Superstar. Yeah.
I feel like I also saw Joseph and the Technicolor Dreamcoat as a kid because it's like a real kid musical.
But the thing about Phantom is that, like, despite all that stuff, I think, like, I don't know. I like thinking about Phantom because it's so freaking popular. Like, it is, like, it's been
it's
running
so
nonstop
horny.
For over 30
weren't
years.
Saying, weren't you saying it's, like, the original 50 Shades of Grey?
Well, that's, yeah.
Like, there are so many children in the audience.
No,
it was just
so
like,
many kids.
Oh, my goodness, all these little kids. And
you know
like,
what, though? A lot of musicals, like, I saw Newsies, which is, like, on the surface, you wouldn't think it's that horny, but it is so horny.
Really?
Yeah, like, the whole time. Just all these guys like jumping over stuff.
That sounds so up my alley.
I cried at the beginning of Newsies. This was like last year, by the way.
Newsies is good.
I saw the live stage version of Newsies at the Pantages, and I like cried when it started because I was just like, spectacle.
Yeah, the beginning of Phantom, I cried when doing the auction and like they reanimate the chandelier.
Well, when the chandelier comes up, it's so scary because it's haunted. It's like it's lights back up and lifts slowly over the audience. And
it's very like, I just think
it's so melancholy too, just like Broadway itself, like re-performing and re-performing and re-performing, and like this, like the chandelier is like in the psyche of so many people in the United States.
It's like, here we go again. There's this amazing video I found of chandelier drops at different
That's the best video, by the way.
That's what I was wondering, is like, has it ever gone wrong, obviously?
Well, you can compare speed. You can also compare the the evil cackle of the Phantom.
That's true. That's one of the best elements.
Like, I was crying while I was watching this video because for some reason, like, over the course of like 30 chandelier drops, you're like, what are we doing as a society? Like, what's going on? Why is this the most popular show of all time?
It's so sacramental in a way.
It's like ASMR. Yeah, it's like watching the Times Square ball drop just like over and over again. Any video where you just watch something happen a million,
it's like a slime video. It's like a compulsive activity or something. It's like the fidget square. Like, the chandelier drop is our fidget cube.
What is the last live musical before Phantom that you saw?
I saw The Great Comet. That was the first Broadway show I saw. Which is like the thing where you're like sitting in the middle of the show and they're like all around. It's like a dinner theater type thing, except all they have is vodka.
So just like our live show?
Yeah, right. Basically.
Dinner theater?
That was pretty cool. I mean, my main show, though, probably before that, the last thing I had seen was Les Mis, because I've seen that a couple times, and that's like my actual show of shows.
I've actually never seen Les Mis live.
It's a great show, actually.
Tess, what about you?
I don't want to answer this question, but I'm going to.
Yes, just, please.
It was Into the Woods at a high school.
I love Into the Woods. It's so good.
I've never seen that.
Oh, I love
it. It's really good.
We were both in that, right?
Yes, we were both in that.
I'm jealous.
My husband directed it, or directed at this high school. So when they do Into the Woods more than any other musical at this high school.
It's got a big cast, and there's lots of parts. So everybody, it's not like Phantom where there's really only like two parts. So
I remember watching the PBS like taped version of Into the Woods like a ton.
Yes, yeah, the one with
Bernadette.
Oh, I love
Bernadette
her.
Is the witch.
Oh my gosh, I love her so much. But isn't Into the Woods, doesn't it weave in like a bunch of
It's all the fairy tales. Okay.
It's like all the different fairy tales.
Just to wrap up on the Phantom tip, I was asking if anyone else had seen Phantom of the Paradise.
What's that?
It is
Love that. Oh my God.
Phantom what is
of
this?
The it's a Brian De Palma remake of Phantom of the Opera set in a movie palace.
Oh my
Very
God.
Starring
beautiful.
Paul Williams as the Phantom. And what's her name? The chick from Suspiria is the girl.
Whoa.
Yeah, I can't remember her name.
It is great. You will all enjoy it. It's
that
like a weird
awesome.
70s.
Yeah, we should watch that. Songs.
Well, the other thing I was going to bring up about Phantom, and like really on the spectacle subject, is that there's also Phantom, like a what's it called? Phantom, a Broadway spectacular. That's the Vegas show. Because while I was watching it, I was like, this is basically a Vegas show,
right?
In a much smaller venue than I think it would be in Vegas. But like you go, if you're really just going to see these huge feats of stagecraft or whatever, you could cut about an hour out of the show and really like have a banger.
You were really pushing for the Baz Luhrmann Cirque du Soleil show for your bachelorette party, and I had to push back and be like, "We're going to see Magic Mike."
Like, we made the
I'm
right
so
decision.
Glad. Yeah,
but
I was so being like. Next time we're going to go see one of those, because I bet I would also be enchanted by some Cirque du Soleil.
But they do have a Moulin Rouge stage musical now that you
this
can...
This is where we part company.
Yeah. Just in case, if you want to go see a show next time you're in New York on Old Broadway.
Night Call on Broadway. What if we do just a Broadway show and it's just all chandelier drops for like 2 hours? Did you guys know there's a sequel to Phantom of the Opera that is apparently one of the worst things ever made?
Yes, people
really?
Were telling me about
called
this on
Love
Twitter.
Love Never Dies.
Yeah, it's like they reunite. It's like Raoul and her end up, the guy that she marries at the end, and the stupidest ending of all time. Like he ends up like kind of being a dud of a husband, and then
he's a dud of a character.
Yeah, he's terrible. And then they go to some beach town or something. It's in Coney Island. That's where they go.
I believe it may be something along those lines.
No. Rachel is telling me it's in Coney Island.
Correct. It's like fan fiction come to life.
Oh, absolutely. But somebody else was telling me that Andrew Lloyd Webber wrote the part of Christine for Sarah Brightman, his wife, And I was like, well, why isn't she just end up with him then? Like, that's clearly how it should end. But I guess it happens
with the
in
Phantom?
The sequel. Yeah.
So people can write fan fiction forever about.
Well, there's not enough fan fiction of Phantom of the Opera. We looked into it.
Oh my god,
yeah, definitely not.
It's like a phantom is born. I feel like between Phantom of the Opera and also like Tuxedo Mask is kind of a Phantom of the Opera.
No, totally, totally. I think that a lot of like young children of the 80s, young girls of the 80s, really imprinted
on
menswear.
They love a man in a scary mask.
Yeah, masks and formal wear. We got really, like, they're just triggers for us.
Just like a scream mask and a tuxedo.
All right. I think that does it for this
that
week.
That does it this for this week. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, thank you so much for being here, Leslie.
Of course.
Thanks, thank you, Leslie.
This is a delight.
Thanks for the Broadway memories. You can give us a night call about your phantom memories. You can give us a call at 1-240-46-NIGHT or an email at nightcallpodcast@gmail.com. And you can follow us on Twitter at nightcallpod, Instagram nightcallpodcast, and Facebook at nightcallpodcast. Oh yeah, and you can follow Leslie on Instagram.
At Leslie Moon. It's LESLEYMOON, like the moon.
And you can see lots of videos of her doing handstands and lifting impossibly heavy things for your daily motivation. So. And that's it for us this week. We'll be back next week. Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Ciao.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in LA, and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s...
She looked like a million bucks.
...scams a bunch of famous athletes out of untold fortunes...
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
It's just unbelievable.
Hide your money in your old Richmond, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast Climbing in Heels is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.